Thank you very much. I know everybody has a lot of questions. What I would like to do first is have Ken Friedman also present his experiences at his radio station for maybe 10 or 15 minutes, because I think this bring what Ken's going to talk about immediately brings how some of this stuff can relate to community radio in our context into focus. And then I'd like to have a discussion that includes both Ken and Dr. Lessig. And at that point, you know, it's all open. Toward the end, I'd like to take a 10-minute break and present a virtual program director, which is something Otis McClay has been working on, which is an interface for letting listener sponsors use content that we're already making available, that we've already decided we're making available on our websites for download, and it just makes it easier and more attractive for them to use that content to aggregate it in ways that other listeners will find attractive, and to drive more more listeners who are using digital devices for listening to use Pacifica content that we've already agreed we're making available. So Ken Friedman is the general manager of WFMU. They're based in Jersey City, and he's widely recognized as the leader and innovator in the area of making community radio available on the web, and also as the IT guru of the grassroots community radio movement. And I asked him to come and talk a little bit about his experiences of how his audience responds to that kind of media and what they're doing and lessons learned. So, Ken, it's your show.
Hey, thanks for inviting me, and thanks, Professor Lessig, for a great presentation. I'll talk about how a lot of the ideas that Professor Lessig just described have actually been implemented at WFMU, which has overall been a big success.
We need you a little louder, a little closer to the mic, and okay. A little more silence in your vicinity.
First, some background on WFMU. We're an independent community freeform radio station. We've been on the air since 1958. The station's freeform tradition actually was inspired by WBAI in the late 60s by the programming of Bob Fast, Larry Josephson, and Steve Post. And in 1967-68, WFMU became a freeform station full-time, although mostly music-based as opposed to talk and public affairs-based. Throughout the 80s, the college that owned us started going down the tubes. We became independent of the college when they went bankrupt in 1994, and we've been an independent, not-for-profit group since 1994. We own our own licenses. We own all our own facilities. We started putting song files on the Internet in 1993, and as soon as I read in Wired magazine in the early 90s that it was going to be possible to distribute audio on the Internet, I decided that I wanted to be there as soon as we possibly could. The biggest frustration we've had at FMU is that although we're licensed to cover New York City and a big chunk of Brooklyn, our transmitter is actually 12 miles deep into Jersey. And due to the buildings in Manhattan and so on and so forth, and just the congested nature of FM in this part of the country, we do not have full coverage of New York City. So it's been very frustrating that we don't have coverage in the area that theoretically we are licensed to coverage. We started streaming on the Internet in late 1996. And initially, I think our staff saw it as a toy, and it didn't cost us anything, so I didn't get much resistance to the idea of streaming the station online. Although I started getting a lot of comments from my staff that this is nothing more than a toy, this is nothing more than glorified CB radio, as it started becoming clear that people were listening to it, other people started saying this is not radio at all, it's not radio if you're tethered to your computer, and so on and so forth. But after several months of streaming, my producers and DJs started getting emails from listeners elsewhere around the country, even elsewhere around the world, and that kind of turned the tide. People started getting very excited by the notion of people listening to them in Tasmania or Europe or Japan. And over time, we started realizing that not only were we capturing new listeners, but we were also recapturing old listeners who had moved out of our broadcast range and maybe now lived on the other side of the country, or they just moved 100 miles away and they could listen to the station again. Several years later, we decided to start archiving our programming, and I faced the same kind of arguments internally at WFMU over whether this was a good idea to present our programming on demand. Some of the arguments that went around is that we're competing with ourselves if we do that. Why would people listen to our live programming if they can listen to any other program from the prior 2 weeks? Is that a good idea? Do we want to be drawing people away from our live programming and giving them opportunities to listen to other programming that's not live? Do we want to give listeners the opportunity to turn off the programs that they don't like so they can only listen to the programs that they do like? And in fact, this was a much more lively argument, but we decided to go ahead and give it a try anyway. And what we found was that some of these things that people were worried about did indeed happen. But despite that, we were overall getting more traffic on our live stream, not less traffic on our live stream. The existence of archive programming was pulling more people in, and although it was now possible for listeners to time shift and decide which programs they liked and which programs they didn't like and base their listening on that, overall everybody was having more listeners. And we also found that a lot of people were listening to programs that they liked that they just weren't able to listen to live. They were listening to programs on their own time frame, and that these people, just like the new streaming listeners, were acting just like our regular traditional FM listeners. They might listen to a program that airs on Monday, on Wednesday, but they were listening to it every single Wednesday. If the archive didn't show up on Wednesday, they acted like the program wasn't on the air. And overall, archiving was a huge success for us. And I should mention at this point that as things stand now, FMU has half of its listeners online. Half of our contributions come in online. We fundraise 14 days a year. And our last fundraiser, which was just this past March, we raised $880,000.
Can you repeat that? How many days?
14 days a year. $880,000. $880,000. And half of that, over half of that, came in online, came in via our website. And we found that a lot of listeners prefer to pledge online. Bear in mind that just because people pledge online doesn't necessarily mean they're listening online. They can listen to FM and pledge online. They can listen online and they can call a telephone to pledge. So one does not equate the other. And we've also found, interestingly, that the majority of our online audience is actually from within our FM signal. While we do have listeners elsewhere around the country and elsewhere around the world, and that's very, very exciting for my staff, and it's a big morale booster for my staff to get emails from people around the country and around the world, the vast majority of our online listening happens from inside our traditional FM coverage area. It's just that people might listen to the FM signal in their car or at home, but when they're at work, tethered to their desk at their computer, they're going to listen online. So the most common type of listener we have are people who are listening both online and to FM, depending on where they are. In the last couple of years, we've gotten more involved in podcasting and blogging and adding secondary and even a third possible stream. And again, I'm finding the same arguments and concerns among my staff. The biggest concern about podcasting was that this would allow listeners to listen to WFMU in a vacuum. They don't have to experience the station's community overall. They don't have to listen to our live programming at all. They can just go to iTunes, subscribe to a podcast, and listen only to that program and nothing else. And what kind of loyalty would that build up to the radio station? And again, in a certain small segment, that is true. But overall, we've recaptured a lot of old listeners. We've captured a lot of younger listeners who only experience audio and radio-type programming via podcasting. A lot of teenagers and people in their 20s and even their 30s just aren't listening to the radio anymore. And we brought a lot of those people back into our fold via podcasting. And overall, the approach that we're taking with our online strategy is a charitable business model. It's the same business model that we had prior to the internet, which is that we put out our programming for free. 90% of the people who listen to it are going to be freeloaders, and they're never going to contribute to the radio station. But the more listeners we have, the more non-freeloaders or donors we will have. And we've applied the same notion to the internet, and it's worked and paid off extremely well. So while we've toyed around with the idea from time to time of having a subscription model, we've rejected that because that doesn't really work in a big way out there in the real world on the internet. There's so much stuff available for free that if we charge people for it, if we restrict access to it, if we try to make people play If we try to make online listeners play by the rules that we want to make them play by, then we're just going to have fewer listeners. And the idea that we're trying to pursue is that we want as many listeners as we can possibly get, and a certain percentage of them will pony up when we ask them for money. And that idea has worked very well. In the last year, we've worked hard on our blog, and again, I'm finding the same arguments by some people on my staff that the blog is too much competition to ourselves. Why should we put up a blog where people can download Creative Commons movies, music that we're getting permissions from bands or labels for? Why should we put these song files and movies up? Because people can't listen to WFMU while they're watching an online movie. They would have to literally turn off our stream in order to download and watch a movie that we're making available. My view of that is that if we don't compete with ourselves, other people will do it for us. And by competing with ourselves, we are at least keeping people, our listeners, inside the WFMU fold and inside our own community. And if we don't pursue these things that compete with ourselves, then we will lose part of our audience altogether. I don't see the competition that we face at WFMU as much from other radio stations as anywhere near as much as just from other online entities such as blogs. Lately, especially a site like YouTube, I see as our biggest competitor out there. I just base that anecdotally on the number of our devoted listeners who tell me that I spent all night last night downloading music videos on YouTube or watching videos on YouTube. One aspect of this I haven't mentioned is the waivers and the licenses that we've pursued, which Professor Lessig went into great detail. We developed the same notion ourselves, where we get record labels and bands to sign off on a one-page waiver. We don't have as many of the variations as they do at the Creative Commons site, which is really important to do that. And I think we're going to have to start doing that exact thing, because while Professor Lessig showed many different versions of the license, we only have one license, which is probably the most, more like the lawyer readable version that you saw up on the screen. And it's important for us to have more human readable versions of our waiver. But we have gotten hundreds and hundreds of waivers from independent record labels and artists telling us that it's okay to do various things with their music, including violating the DMCA provisions that would limit us from doing a special based on their music, or from pre-publishing the existence of their music on our streamer archive, or archiving their music for longer than what's legally allowed, or making song files available, and so on and so forth. So we've put a lot of effort into that, but unfortunately nowhere near enough. I'm finding that as far as we've gone at WFMU in this area, and we are looked within the world of community radio as a leader in this area, I feel that we're not moving anywhere near fast enough. I feel that I'm underfunded to be able to get there as quickly, and that we're not quite ready for the challenges that are coming down the pike. One of the biggest challenges I see coming down the pike now is the Perform Act, which would essentially make MP3 streams illegal and replace MP3 as a format with a digital rights management protected version of a streaming format, which I'm very concerned about, because my MP3 streams, of all the formats that I stream in, those are by far the most popular streams. And if I suddenly announce to my audience that our MP3 stream will no longer be available as of January 1st, and if you want to listen to WFMU online after that, you're going to have to put a new sound card in your computer, I will lose most of my online audience. They simply will not do that. As much as they may love FMU, if they have to buy a new sound card, put it in their computer, that's just too great of a hurdle for most people to go through. They will simply listen to other things, they will watch other things on the internet, and I will lose them as listeners and lose them as contributors. So I see that as a huge threat looming to our online strategy. And the way I would try to get around that threat, I'm sure, is going to raise more arguments than I've ever seen internally at FMU, because I think the best solution around that problem would be to create a third stream of programming, which would be a completely pod-safe stream of programming. That's going to mean really stepping up my efforts at creating a Creative Commons-type or pod-safe database of music and programming and talk that we can draw from. It's going to mean creating a third stream, which people will see as direct competition to ourselves. Again, why would people listen to WFMU proper if they can listen to the pod-safe version, that the pod safe stream that we're going to put up. And I have to admit that some people will do that. But the point is that I feel that if the Perform Act does become law and I don't do that, I will lose those people altogether. So it's better to compete with ourselves than to lose those listeners altogether and keep them out of the fold. The one aspect of this that I haven't gone into, which is to what degree are we freely giving away our programming to other radio stations? And that's an area that hasn't been resolved at FMU yet. While we freely give away our programming and our podcasts to listeners, we have not yet determined what our policy is going to be to other radio stations, whether they're online or FM, that want to use our programming. We have given limited permission to people to reuse our programming on other radio stations, especially online radio stations. But we have not given wholesale permission. From time to time, we get requests from other online radio stations whether it would be okay to subscribe to all 15 of our podcasts and rebroadcast all 15 of our podcasts elsewhere. We have not given permission to other online radio stations to do that because it doesn't fit into our charitable business model, which is that we want as many listeners listening to us, to all of our offerings, coming to our website as much as possible, keeping people in the WFMU family, keeping them in the community so that when it comes time to try to pay our bills for the year, they'll be there for us. And the idea of allowing other broadcasters to just freely use any of our programming without any restrictions doesn't really fit into that. So we're in a atmosphere where there's been an incredible democratization of media out there, and a lot of people in community radio constantly go back and forth between seeing online broadcasting and all the various possibilities for radio stations online as either a threat or an opportunity. And unfortunately, it seems to usually be one or the other. People either see these things as a threat or as an opportunity. They're both. They're both a threat and an opportunity. It depends what we do with it. And I think that it's important for community radio to not look at the internet as a toy or something that it can be used, something that can be used just to raise money or just to maybe distribute one programming, but to look at the internet as another means of transmission that's every bit as important as your FM transmitter and your tower and your antenna that sits on top of your tower, and incorporate it into your overall existence. And that's pretty much what I have to talk about. And one second.